Of course, there are challenges, because there's nothing can be achieved without financial support. It's quite clear when government officials remain for many months without salaries. And this is partly because of this war. People have been uprooted from their land and are now refugees and displaced people elsewhere. There are no what is called non-oil revenues. So we are dependent on oil. Much of the oil money goes to the oil-producing companies. And we get maybe 20% of the oil produced. And again, with the drop of the price of oil in the international market, and with other obligations of the government during the war, we've been getting loans here and here, and we're paying back these loans. There's little money that's left. So although the people are very enthusiastic, still they will be faced with the challenge of no money. And I'm wondering why the government have been expanded. They say we didn't want to, because there is a problem where people, you release some people, relieve them from the government, then they go and rebel. So they revitalized the peace agreement. Its implementation was a bit complicated. Implementing it means you dissolve the government, appoint new people, some people in, people will be coming into the government, and those who are in the government may be relieved. And if they are relieved, they will also go and rebel, because they think their rebellion rewards. So it was thought not to relieve anybody. Those who are in the government must remain, be part of the government, and those who are outside of the government, they will also be brought in. So nobody will be a loser. The state government used to be 7 ministers, plus governor and deputy governor, 9 maximum. Now it has been made 17. The assembly, parliament in the states, used to be 51. Now it has been taken to 100. The government in the state is huge. And with no infrastructure in the state, and no people are all displaced, most of them, and there's no business through which you can raise revenue, then there will always be deficit. So I'm puzzled, really, how are they going to run the government without money? And money is the power. I don't think any system can function without money.
Some people have been asking this important question, General, about the money. How much does South Sudan make from the oil money? You said it's only 20% that you get, but the rest goes to oil production, the companies that are involved, and the employees. How much is this money?
Well, really, I'm not... have no information how much is the money. And you can calculate if the how much barrels being produced per day and for 1 month how much it is and what is the price of this sale of the oil in the international market. You can roughly get how much money it is. But you know the normally, the non-oil revenue should be more than the oil revenue. If there was no war, if we were engaged in supporting ourselves, then would raise more money than the money we get from the oil.
Some assessments have ranked South Sudan as one of the most corrupt countries in the world. What do you say to that?
It's not a government, but these are individuals. But it's difficult, really, to tackle them, because they get this money, and you get hold of somebody, then this person has, with the money he gets from the government, he has mobilized his relatives. And if you become hard on them, they will rebel. It is the international community that can expose how much money, because they have taken, I understand, it is said that this money are taken to the neighboring countries, to the banks. So I think nobody is telling us to expose The money there is available somewhere and there and there. Yes, there's corruption. It's corruption. The corruption is encouraged even by the people themselves. You find the member of the parliament who is elected, then people celebrate as soon as a person is elected. What does it mean? It will hold a party and thanking the people, and people come in. Tomorrow they will say, okay, we supported you. Now you want to pay back. Otherwise, next time we're not going to elect you. So there's corruption. Yeah, the people, they think that their ministers and anybody in the government has to pay the money. The relative will all go, and they have to be saved with money. So it is there's corruption, yeah.
This official that you know, they are corrupt in your system, and they get removed, they mobilize their relatives to fight the government. Why don't you use the law? The law has to take its course to make sure the constitution of the Republic of South Sudan take force and impunity is not encouraged. Why don't you punish them?
It is not like simple like that. Because what authority do you, what power do you use to subdue them? And the attempt to punish them resulted into rebellion. Have we defeated them? When they rebel, take up the guns, they go with the army and they fight, and you get a lot of losses here and there. So it is not easy.
How do you think now this corruption which has led South Sudan maybe into what we see today, which is not the country you fought for the last 22 years? You are a non-liberator in this country and everybody respects you for that. And when you were addressing the rally today, you say we have destroyed our own country, that you said, and that the people must stand up to the challenge of infrastructural development, security, and service delivery. So this is not the country you fought for. How do you think you can transform it? Because you are still in power. You're still the senior presidential advisor.
We don't talk about power. Power means use the force to subdue and control the people. We have to use logic. This is what I have been telling them. Please, you are the teachers. You are now happy that we brought in peace. This peace needs to be nurtured. Now you go and talk to the people, educate them, because some are very, very ignorant. Yes, even if they are educated and they miss some points. This insecurity is affecting everybody. There's nobody that is really secure to say that I am secure. Let us now come together, since we have fought the war for the last 20 years or 15 years. No winner is losing. We have lost all. Let us now go back to our people and appeal to them, educate them. You make yourself teachers. This is what I was telling them. Teach them and talk to them. Persuade them. There are people, they will listen. Don't give up. You have to move and talk and talk and talk. We don't use force. Otherwise, there will be a lot of death and we'll be blamed. If we get a force now and move against these people, we are blamed by the human rights. We are violating. And if we don't use the force, they will not listen. What do we do? So the only thing, let us go slowly. We talk to them. Deny our self-rest, talk to them in their localities, and convince them. Let us use this small chance built by when people are euphoria, they are happy about this peace. Let us exploit this, and we talk to our people. We may win. We may convince them. Still, I'm optimistic that there is. They say there's time for peace and there's time for war. There's time for war and there's time for peace. Maybe the time for peace has come. So let us try and talk to them. Nobody really will come and bring peace to our people. It's we ourselves. We have to persuade ourselves.
Now I'm looking at the problem of South Sudan being persistent from 2005 when you formed the government of Southern Sudan to the independence that was attained in 2011. And now this is 2021. And you as a liberator, you said there were some things you were fighting for. You were fighting because the government in the Sudan was not doing some good things for you. And now you are persuading the people to work with the government so that the government moves forward. Unfortunately, you say there's no money that can be used to develop all these things. So how do you bring in the friends of South Sudan? And in this case, I'm talking about the international community. How do you engage them to come to your rescue?
The friends of South Sudan, they are already there here in South Sudan, and they are doing their work. What is lacking is that we have to present to them our programs, telling them this is what we can do. Let us first see what can we do ourselves. We made a plan, and then we see what can we do, how much can we go, how far, how much can we implement of this plan. And after that, we go to them, the friends of South Sudan, look, this is what we want to do, and this is what we'll meet up to this level, and this is what will be lacking, a deficit here. So when you to support and see how you can support us in this initiative. I think they will come forward. If we put a plan forward and give them, and they see that we are also working genuinely, we spill the blood and brought the liberation, we liberate our country, we must continue also liberating ourselves from other challenges facing us, like the hunger. We can farm and produce our own food. We tell our friends, you support us until such a time. After this time, we'll be able to feed ourselves. Our friends from the international community to support us in, we to, should be in the leading, and then they support us. Not there to be in the lead. We must be in the lead, and they support us.
You have been a governor in Jonglei State. You have also been a defense minister. And now you sit at the right hand of the president as the senior presidential advisor to General Salva Kiir Mayardit. Discussing issues of South Sudan at that particular level, what exactly is the problem that you find to be challenging the leadership of this particular country? And being a presidential advisor, what do you tell your president in this case?
Well, still there was some people were still suspicious of one another. Building confidence was also another problem. People who have been at war and they had been dishonoring agreement from time to time. And so people were fearing. And I'm glad there's no active statements again being given by the leaders of the parties. They are not attacking each other. And that is a good hope. As soon as I go from here, we'll go and find out again from the president what is the way forward after this. We have already, what we need to do now is how do we support these governments? And there, from there, if he will tell me what he has, and from there I will see if I will have an advice to give him, I'll give him. Or if he will tell me now what is your advice, I'll give him.
I'm looking at this big government. You're going to have more than 500 members of National Transitional Legislative Assembly. You're already having 17 ministers in the state, commissioners, and things like that. And you're not sure if the country is going to have sufficient money to support your government. This is a very big challenge that you'll have to overcome at J1. But again, let me post this question. An individual, a liberator, you are a father. And in South Sudan now, you find that sometimes some families go without food. And say, for instance, in Greater Jonglei region, where people have been displaced by the flood. How do you feel about that, given your position, given your history of liberation struggle? Do you feel like this is not the country you fought for? Do you feel like something should be done about the suffering of the people of South Sudan? And what is that thing?
Well, Samuel, the culture of people is not easy to change overnight. Our people, they don't know the importance of economy. They are not economically active. There are people who are still leading a traditional way of life. They think the cows are keeping cows for prestige. And when you tell them that you are poor, they fight you because they don't want to be called poor. It's we who say this person is poor because they don't have a toilet, they don't eat three meals in a day. They don't eat different types of food. They now you see they are naked or semi-naked and all this. This is how we view them. And when they come and tell you that they are poor, they want to exploit you. There are some people who pretend to be poor when they are not. If you give them food, they wonder if you refuse it. Something being given to you, why do you refuse it? So some people will come and get food when they have cows, actually. They could even sell a cow and get their own food. But they pretend to be, they come and say they are suffering and all this. This one, they are keeping cows for what? For marriages. And you find somebody paying 10 cows, 20 cows, 30 cows for a marriage, a young person. Now, if he take these cows and sell them and make business, then he will not be a poor person. And let him first accumulate money, and then later on, after 2, 3, 4 years, can marry. But they want to marry now with 10 cows, and they remain with nothing. So this issue of expensive dowry, imagine if in some areas, you can see some although they are collected from the immediate members of the family, a contribution from here and here, and somebody was paying something about 300 cows, 200 cows. Are these people, can you consider them to be poor? They are not poor, but only they don't know how to use these wealth to benefit themselves. Even the milk, they are not even selling the milk. You see, they will prefer even to go and ask somebody who is working in the government to buy them a medicine. They don't want to sell their cows.
Yes, and in Greater Jonglei, people are suffering. There is intercommunal violence, there is flood. And since the conflict erupted in 2013, your president has never visited this place. Why?
The president, I think there are some challenges he's managing the revitalized peace agreement in the first place. Then you have the coronavirus that is also available. He will not come and gather the people. But I think he's working by sending, informing the relief organizations and the ministries to provide service to the people. He's doing it. And you see, we see him over the TV talking to them and directing them to provide services to the people there. For him to come as a person, what will he come and do? Will he come and appear in front of them? And doesn't give them anything. So I think he's coming in to Jonglei here when even he doesn't even have his own means of transportation. It's not there. There's no plane, helicopter, it's not there for him to land in some places. The roads are also not well paved. And so there are a lot of challenges. And if he goes out, they will break down.
The Jain Council of Elders last month wrote a very powerful letter. It was known as, they titled it Breaking the Silence, The Way Forward. It was a very, very strongly worded document. Are you concerned about the content? Because this is the first time they're coming out to say things that they say in that letter that you are aware of.
Well, for the president to step down with his deputy Riak, what do they say about the revitalized peace agreement? Are they canceling it? I think they have no power to cancel or to scrap the revitalized peace agreement. But we can correct ourselves. It's good for them to mention those are facts. There are facts that they have mentioned. But really, are they to be counted on the president alone? Don't they have also a share in the failures in the government? I think nobody should really distance himself from the failures that have happened here in South Sudan. Our people are sitting idle. What are they saying to our people, these elders, the Jain Council of Elders? What are they telling the youth? Telling the youth to rise and topple the government? And what will be the replacement? Or are they calling for the UN to come and take over the government? While they are right, we should think of the alternative. What do we do? How do we correct ourselves? And we are not ignoring what they said. There are some facts there. There we have to look into and correct ourselves. So we are not condemning them that very much, but the way they want it to happen, that's clear and sell and react to go. Then who will fill the gap? Why don't we? It is enough. They have mentioned this. We'll see into it that we correct ourselves.
South Sudan has been run on a transitional constitution for a very long time, and you're looking at a permanent constitution in the nearest future. Looking at the presidency, it's like all the powers to run the country are at J1. Now, one is also wondering, why is it that it's taking your government a very long time to reconstitute the national parliament? What exactly is happening, Gerald?
People were arguing on the share. A lot of many parties, and each party wanted to have a lion's share, and have a share that is even not equivalent to their weight. There has been some of these challenges here and there. The parliament is going to be formed very soon.
Okay.
Again, we want a parliament. Our people have been blaming anything on the government, on the president. But I think the parliament has not been doing their work. The parliament is supposed to be overseeing the oversight body that has to monitor and see, make sure that the government is going in the right direction. Summoning a minister and passing the bills sent to them by the executive, parliament had not been active.
Maybe they're just afraid that any time if they make mistake, they could be fired, because the president has the power to appoint and even remove a member of parliament. Can you imagine? And we send these members of parliament from our constituencies here to Juba. Maybe that's why they're not doing their job.
No, it never happened that a president has removed somebody because he has talked against the government. But it's people only who do not want even to go to talk. Can they set an example of somebody who has been talking against the government has been removed? It's not there.
Looking at these people who are always removed by the president, you find that somebody worked for 3 months, is removed, somebody is brought in and is removed, and things like that. Does he remove people because they are corrupt? And why does he have to bring them back to the government? And if they are corrupt, I just want to ask this question again, why can't they be tried?
Well, that's a problem. That is a problem. The president will remove somebody now because people are crying foul on them. You see, the people themselves who recommend this person, and tomorrow again, they're the one also they will remove, will say this person has to go away. These are the failures and these are the shortcomings from our side. President has that share in that failure, because he cannot remove somebody now, because he has failed to exercise due or to carry out his duties perfectly. And again tomorrow, after sometimes he's returned.
Do you think that your president has been running the country perfectly?
Nobody that can run the government perfectly in the world. I think that issue of perfect is not there. Yes, there are some failures. It's a human being. There are failures. And maybe there are some people who will go and flatter the president, telling him what is not true, missing disinformation, maybe there. And these are the people who are appointed. You see, the appointment of people to a certain level normally is the work of the council of ministers to approve appointment of a senior person. It's not happening. It's a mistake, because the president can appoint by a decree. When it is actually passed by the council of ministers, then it goes now for a decree to appoint. And if there is any relief, then there must be justification for that. This has not been happening. Somebody's relief without knowing why he was removed from position. These are failures that are there. We've got to correct ourselves from this.
Do you think that the country will go for elections next year?
I don't think, because there are things that have to be done to precede the elections. Implementation of the revitalized agreement. Now we have formed the government in the states. These governments will have to work for peace, disarmament, of the civil population peacefully. And if they don't, then we have to use a reasonable force to disarm them. After this, then repatriation. Because if there is no peace, then those people in diaspora, in refugees camps, in displaced person camps, will not go back to their areas. And after the repatriation, we go for census. The census will determine the constituencies. And after that, we go for the elections.
How long do you think the transitional period will be extended?
Really, we need to see how soon are we going to effect the peace itself and disarmament. And this is what we want to tell our people. You want to elect your people, send your people to be elected, to elect your people to the parliament and to the government, then we need to make peace. So that you are able now to freely elect people of choice to the parliaments. So let us implement the peace. And by implementing peace, we say, hand over the arms to the government and the police shall take care of your security.
But these arms have always found their way back into the hands of the civilians. How does it happen?
The peace that we are going to preach will make the people themselves not to look for arms again. Because the arms are what brought the deaths to them and insecurity. So we should not accept the arms again to come back to. The guns that are be collected, they will have to be shredded, destroyed. And of course, maybe the borders are porous. The arms can come from there and there. These are issues, again, we'll safeguard ourselves. We tell our people, warn them. We have been having these guns, and we have not been enjoying peace. Now let us give this a chance. We know about again to bring the guns to the country. I think it will be our work, together with our population, so that no, we only give the police the right to carry the guns and protect the people.
Before I ask my last question, it's been a very long interview. What do you think of the UNMISS support, the support from the United Nations mission in South Sudan, in supporting the government and the people of South Sudan in attaining sustainable peace?
Well, the UNMISS is our people respect the UNMISS. And this is why there is no attack on the UNMISS forces, wherever they are. They are welcome everywhere. I will commend their work. So I think the UN also should also try to channel their and bring the funds, increase the funds for the UNMISS to help the government of South Sudan in building roads. No, we are not buying guns any longer. We are building roads instead. Now, should they not join us? They should join us now in building roads, because we are not any longer fighting.
My last question is about the relations of South Sudan and the United States of America and other superpowers. Some officials in your government have been sanctioned. You are one of them. And I think you have been working hard to make sure that you have a very good relations with the United States of America that is stood with you during the liberation struggle, or should I say the CPA, during the signing of the CPA. So how are you working hard to make sure that these relations are strengthened? Maybe if there are obstacles, they're removed. And then you work as a friendly nations, and those who are on the sanction list, the sanctions could be lifted on these people.
It's unfortunate, Samuel, that America has decided to sanction people here and there. And I thought their sanction should have been sanction approved by the United Nations rather than America itself. I believe me and many others are innocent. And the charges, what are justification for the, can they justify for laying the sanctions, imposing sanctions on us? What have we done? What have I done, for example? And I don't know even why I'm sanctioned.
So you're obstructing peace.
What is the evidence that I'm obstructing it? What evidence do they have? So we are not to be friends of America alone. We want to be friends of the whole world. I have nothing. What are they sanctioning me? I don't have a bank account. I don't have money, American dollars everywhere. I want to be a friend to all the people of the world, Americans, the Europeans, the Asians, the Africans. This is what we are. We are not a property of an individual country. Yes. For America to be the pain holder of South Sudan, that's wrong. Who gave him that? They gave it to themselves. I reject that. They did not bring South Sudan to be independent. It's us, we fought. We spilled blood. Myself, I have been wounded twice. Had I not taken up the gun, would America have come to give independence to South Sudan? Our people are the ones that liberated their country. And yes, we know the support. They did not give us guns, by the way.